All right. Do you believe in magic?
Yeah.
Some of you, yeah, you believe in magic? Yeah. You know, the answer I usually give is yes and no. I believe in the magic that this talks about, the magic that happens when we get inspired, when something catches us. You know, we start dancing, we start singing, we start, you know, praying, we start praising the Lord, we start doing whatever it is that sort of lifts us into a higher level of expression. I prefer the term miracles or synchronicity or some of these things that have a little more scientific explanation. But miracle, you know, magic. There is a magic that happens. And the reason I thought of this particular song to go along with today's lesson was some years ago. Well, first, when we're talking about magic, I'm not talking about the kind of magic which somehow supersedes the natural laws, or that supersedes that higher consciousness, the outpicturing of a higher consciousness, but those things which have no explanation. You know, it's not. We're not talking about sleight of hand. We're not talking about card tricks or whatever. But we're talking about miracles, things which work with the natural laws, but it's more about timing, and it's more about understanding how to work with those natural laws, the spiritual laws. It's kind of like, well, most of us are kind of like the Unity minister who's out fishing, and he's fishing, he's with two other ministers, and they're out in a boat, out off the shore, and at one point, the rabbi says, you know, I'm hungry. I think I'll go to the beach and have some lunch. And so he gets up out of the boat and starts walking across the water to the beach and goes to the beach and he's fixing himself some lunch. And then the priest says, you know, that sounds like a good idea too. And he gets up out of the boat, walks across the water to the beach. And the Unity minister is sitting there going, you know, his eyes are wide. And he says, well, if they can do it, I can do it too. And he gets up out of the boat on the other side, splash, sinks straight to the bottom. Rabbi looks back and says, you think we should have told him where the stepping stones were? Right? Where the stepping stones, because we can walk on water. We do it all the time here in Michigan in the winter, right? We walk on water all the time. And when we're talking about walking on water, you know, they say Jesus walked on water, but there's nowhere in here where it says Jesus walked on water. We're going to be working with the 6th chapter of John today, which is the feeding of the 5,000. And right after the feeding of the 5,000, there's the story of Jesus, of the disciples getting in a boat to go across the sea. And they ran into a headwind, and they see something, somebody, some apparition walking along the shore. It's actually Jesus, but they think it's because they have these superstitions about how spirits come out, the evil spirits come out at night, you know, and so they thought for sure that it was some evil spirit, and he speaks and says, no, it's me. And immediately they are where they're supposed to be. Well, it says he's walking by the sea or on the sea. He's walking on the sea. Have any of you ever lived on a bay or lived on a lake? Right? Did you actually live on the water? If you had a boathouse, or what do they call it? A houseboat. You may have actually lived on the water, but you were floating atop, you had a... So this is actually talking about his walking on by the sea. Now, in the Mark version of this particular story, Peter says to Jesus, Lord, bid me come to you, and I will come to you. And Jesus says, come. And so he gets up and he walks on the face of the water. So it's pretty obvious Peter's the one walking on the water. Of course, he sees what he's doing, and most of us, when we're in the midst of walking on water, when we're accomplishing something that we didn't think we could accomplish, and we're in the midst of it, and we look down, and we say, oh my God, what the heck am I doing? He started to sink, and then he was lifted up by that spiritual awareness. As it says, you can conquer anything. We can conquer anything in our lives if we just keep our vision up and stop looking down, stop listening to others, stop listening to all the naysayers, right? Stop watching the news. I have to do that. I don't watch news on Saturdays. That's my day off, you know? I caught a little bit of the news this morning, and I'm kind of glad I didn't. You know, I had a good day yesterday, so I missed some of the stuff that was going on. And there's always something going on in the news. You know, we have this 24-hour news cycle now, and there is a definite bias in the news. It's a sensationalist bias, right? It's a sensationalist bias. We hear the same story over and over again, so it seems like there's so much going on when it's really just one thing, or, you know, and it's the same stuff that was happening before. It's just that we now can hear about it within seconds after it happens. So we have a sensationalist thing happening in the news, and we just have to turn it off once in a while and to tune in to what's real, to tune into that God substance, the real, what is real, what stands under substance, stands under. I started to talk a little bit about the sixth chapter of John. The reason I was thinking about this particular, you know, magic had to do with about 6 years ago. I write a column. Actually, I don't write. I contribute to a column in the Clarkston News. There's six ministers, and so every 6 weeks I have an article come out. And some years back, I wrote an article on Thanksgiving called Thanks Living. And there was a response from another fundamentalist minister who took exception to what I was saying and wrote a letter to the editor. So then I responded. First, let me read the beginning of my response here. He says, I took the opportunity to call the pastor because I agree with most of his points, and I was not clear as to what he must react against. He had quite a strong reaction. He said he must react against what I had said, and he even said that I shouldn't even be allowed to write for the newspaper, you know, because I was not, you know, fundamentalist Christian point of view. That wasn't how he put it, but. And I went on to say, I did not suggest that Jesus utilized magic tricks. Quite the opposite. He accused me of accusing Jesus of you doing magic tricks. It's a play on words there. But on this point, the pastor and I disagree. We both have our authoritative references, so in the final analysis, it comes down to a difference in opinion, because we talk about Jesus walking on water. Well, he was walking on the sea. Peter walked across the face of the water. So as we look at the Aramaic language and how they use those phrases, it's kind of like being in a pickle, right? Jonah was in a belly of a whale, or a belly of a fish. And we think it's become a whale, even though it never says anything about whale in the story. But if we're in that doubt and fear and loathing and wondering and being guided to do something we really don't want to do, and we're running the opposite direction, we're in the belly of a big fish. It's like being in a pickle. Ever been in a pickle? I don't think you were encased within a vegetable, right? No. It's an idiom. It's a way we use the language. And at the beginning of the sixth chapter of John, I was talking about the feeding of the 5,000. And at the feeding of the 5,000, of course, they go up onto the mountaintop. See, this is happening on a mountaintop, at a high place in consciousness. The daily word goes along really well today. High place in consciousness. And we have one of the disciples. There's 5,000 men there. How many people were there? We don't know. Even if there were 5,000 men, how many women and children were there? Well, they don't count, right? Well, they do. But in this particular, there's a reason why it says 5,000. 5,000. It could have been 5. It could have been 50. It could have been 500. But they use 5,000. The 5 stands for sense consciousness, right? We have 5 senses. Sight, sound, taste, touch, smell, right? Those are 5. I think I hit 5. We have 5 holes in our heads. We have 5 fingers on each hand. We have 5 toes. You know, this is talking about sense consciousness. In the Old Testament, we'll have 5 kings, or we'll have 5 of this and 5 of that. And you have to know that that's where we are in consciousness, in sense consciousness. You know, recently I was reading an article, and the minister was talking about spiritual interpretation, metaphysical interpretation of the Bible, and looking at these stories as teaching stories, which is how they were meant to be taken. And he says, it's not that that they wrote them literally, and we are now taking them symbolically. It was that they were written symbolically, and that we might dare today to take them literally. That's the problem, is that these were written with symbolic language. They're stories. They're teaching stories. They didn't have pens and paper to write these things down. What they had, they told stories, stories with a meaning. And if it was just flat, dry stories, like a lot of ministers, you know, even myself, get caught up in sometimes just laying out the facts, you know, people lose it. They're not gonna remember the stories. So you have to make them figurative, symbolic. And so then we have to understand symbolically in order to understand what's going on here. So we wrote about 5,000. That means we're very deeply into, with a 000, where, you know, it's a real emphasis on being caught up in sense consciousness. And when we're in sense consciousness, what do we experience? Lack, limitation, disease, war, conflict. That's what's going on out there. That's what we see. But what's real is peace and harmony and abundance. There's always enough. And that's what this story is showing us. There's not lack and limitation. And so Philip comes to Jesus and says, hey, what would 200 denarii, which is basically, you know, somebody's wages for a year, that would not be enough bread, you know, money to buy bread for this group of people. And Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, Andrew symbolizing strength, and Simon Peter faith, comes to him and says, hey, we have got a young boy here, and he's got 5 loaves and 2 fish. But what of that among so many? And what does Jesus do? He takes the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and he gives thanks. He gives thanks for what he has. Charles Fillmore, in the Mysteries of Genesis, says that praise and thanksgiving are the first steps to experiencing our abundance. So giving thanks for what we have, knowing that what we have, that there's more than enough good to go around, and that all that we need and desire is readily provided. All that we need and desire is readily provided when we give thanks and we praise what we do have. And we move forward and do what we need to do. And what happened? Well, he raised it up, and it says here that he distributed them to those who were seated, so also the fish, as much as they wanted. And when they had eaten their fill, he told the disciples to gather up the fragments so that none would be left over. So we get this image of the loaves and the fishes magically multiplying, don't we? And that's, I would say, most of us here, that's how we see this story. When we've heard this story, that's how it's been. All of a sudden, that out of nothing came more than abundance, more than enough good to receive. And the part of the letter that the pastor found objectionable was when I started talking about this particular part of the story, sharing some research that has been done into the culture and the history of the people. And it says, what happens next is sometimes portrayed as a sort of magic trick. So I'm saying some people think it's like a magic trick. Wouldn't you think that would be magic? Right? When we make something disappear or reappear out of thin air, that's kind of a magic trick, right? As if the 5 loaves were somehow magically multiplied to feed the 5,000 men, plus who knows how many women and children, leaving 12 baskets with fragments being gathered up after the feast. Scholars familiar with the customs of the people of the time will tell you that they were not likely to travel into the wilderness without provisions. How many of you go camping without taking any food with you? Right? Or you stop at Myers or Kroger's along the way. Or you go on a trip, you know. There were no, as I go on to say, there were no Kroger, Meyer, or party stores on every corner. Travelers packed more than their anticipated needs and hid their stores with their baggage to discourage beggars and thieves. The generosity of the lad with the 5 loaves and 2 fish was the catalyst which prompted an avalanche of sharing. This is the true miracle. Can you imagine people who are, you know, I'm going to keep, you know, I got to save it for myself. Like, I got to keep, make sure that my family or the, you know, my traveling companions and I have enough to get back, right? We have to make the, you know, we don't know how long we're going to be out here in the wilderness. We don't know how long we're going to be traveling. You know, they would usually hide everything until they knew they were almost home, and then they would share everything. Well, in this case, they were motivated to share by the generosity of this young lad with the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, right? says people who would not have normally shared freely did. Where do you think the 12 baskets came from? Where did the 12 baskets come from? And when I asked the pastor about that, he said, well, Jesus manifested those too. Okay. All right. If he can make food come out, why would he have to make baskets to carry the food in? He'd just make it when he needed it, right? It doesn't make a lot of logical sense. Our opportunity is to participate in thanks living, living in an attitude of gratitude. We are grateful for the abundance even before we have received. We're grateful for the abundance even before we are received. That's an attitude of gratitude. To be grateful in advance. People say, well, you know, to be grateful in advance or to give thanks in advance. In advance of what? Well, in advance of the demonstration, because the substance, all that we need and desire is readily provided. We just need to be aware of it. I've been in a building fund drive before, and I said, the good news is that there's more than enough money in this room to build the building. Now, the problem is it's all in your pockets, right? So the trick is, the magic is, the miracle is allowing for the sharing. There's more than enough people in this sanctuary right now to support a ministry. And it is supporting a ministry right now, right? And to draw, when we live in that consciousness of abundance, then we draw to us all that we need and desire. Now, you'll notice I didn't say want, right? What's the difference? Well, in the absolute, needs and wants are the same thing. Wants and desires are the same thing. But in this relative plane of existence, wants are for things, right? I want a bigger house. I want a fancier car. I want more money in my bank account, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I want things, whereas a desire of the Father is to experience, is to have an experience of the peace and the wholeness and abundance that is ours to experience right here and right now. So those qualities of being are experiences that we desire, that we can draw towards us. Prosperity is not having things, but it's the consciousness that draws to us all that we need and desire. So having that consciousness, to know that there's more than enough good to go around. That's what tithing to me is that practice, is practicing that awareness that there's more than enough good to share. I've always got something to share. Whether I have money in my pocket or not, if I don't have money, I probably have time. If I don't have time, I probably have money, right? Or some other good, right? People with money seem to never have time to do things. But so we have the five representing sense consciousness, and we add those two mental senses of clairvoyance and intuition, symbolized by the fish, to come up to that physical completion of the seven. The seven loaves, or the five fish, five loaves and two fish, brings us to that symbolic seven. And Charles Fillmore, writing about this, says that if you have a consciousness of the capacity that is involved in the natural man's sevenfold nature, so that's physical completion, you have a good foundation on which to build the 12-fold or spiritual man. The 12-fold or the spiritual man. So there was 12 baskets left over. The symbology just jumps out at us in this story. It's such a good story for that. The numerical symbology. And all these stories are symbolic. As I was mentioning, it says in Mark, it says that he taught with a parable, and without a parable did he not teach. Parables are earthly stories with heavenly meanings. They are stories that teach. They're teaching stories. So we have that 12, the 5, the 7, and the 12. These are spiritual numbers. These are symbolic numbers. Sense consciousness, physical completion, and spiritual completion. The 12, the 12 disciples, the 12 tribes of Israel, the 12 sons of Jacob, the 24 elders in the book of Revelation that symbolize those 12 powers being fully balanced. There's 12 cranial nerves that come out of our brain. I mean, the 12 is just is symbolic of that spiritual completion. Now, as we've been working, this is in with these seven miracle stories in the book of John. This is the fourth miracle story. The first one was the story of the turning of the water to wine, and then we had the healing of the official's son, and then we had the healing of the man at Bethsaida, and now we have the feeding of the 5,000. And there's a total of seven miracles or signs in the book of John that are the framework. And we continue to work with these as we go through the year. And as well as there being seven signs in the book of John, I'm also sharing with you my seven S's of spiritual consciousness. My seven S's. You know how many remember what the first one was? I already mentioned it earlier in the lesson. Synchronicity. Synchronicity. Meaningful coincidences. Things are always happening for a purpose. I was reading in Reader's, I picked up some old Reader's Digest and was reading through about some stories, and they're talking about miracles. And basically, it's just like the miracle here. It's a matter of timing. These miracles, these that they're talking about in these stories and Reader's Digest, it's about somebody who drove their car into the lake, and just as the car was sinking, another car drives into the parking, you know, right behind him. They just happened to be had to stop and check their map, and they stopped, and then one of them said, "Hey, there's some red lights out in the lake," and they realized it was a car that was sinking, so they jumped, ran in and pulled the person out of the lake. They weren't going to stop at this particular spot. You know, the person who went into the lake apparently had a heart attack and ended up driving into the lake. And they just happened to be at the right place at the right time. Synchronicity. It's God's way of maintaining anonymity, right? Right? And then we had the second one, synergy. Synergy, where two or more are gathered in my name, therefore so am I. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. That's Aristotle. That we come together as a group with shared beliefs and shared ideas so that we can be more than we can be individually. I mean, that's why we get married. That's why we come together as a church. That's why we come together as any group, that we can do more together than we can individually. And then we have synthesis. Last time I was here, we talked about synthesis. Synthesis. Hegel's dialectic. For every thesis, there's an equal and opposite antithesis. Kind of like Newton's. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So for every postulation of an idea, there's the opposite. Which comes into play a lot in churches or in small groups, because every time I say, hey, this would be a great direction to go in, wouldn't you, these changes be wonderful? There's the opposite, equal and opposite reaction that says, no, we're not changing that. You know, and the faster you go in one direction, the harder the resistance is in the other direction. That's why in groups, it's always best to go slowly, one step at a time, right? To know that, and because, as we understand, for every antithesis and for every thesis and antithesis that come together, that have any discussion between the two groups or the ideas, when we allow those ideas to come together, what we have is a greater level, a synthesis. So that no longer just the thesis and the antithesis, they've come together and form a greater level of expression than could have been. It's that synergy in action. And we have a new thesis, the synthesis. We move through that pedunculal point to tear Darshai down, where you know we bump on our heads against it, and then eventually we break through. It's the quantum leap. There's many different ways of understanding that. And today, our fourth S is simplicity. Simplicity. Keep it simple, sweetie. Right? Keep it simple, sweetie. In physics, they call it Occam's razor. Anybody ever heard of Occam's razor? You watch, what is that? Big Bang Theory, yes. They're really into that. Occam's razor, it's also known as the law of parsimony. The law of parsimony, I don't know. How do you pronounce that word? Which essentially means thrift. Simplicity. Simply stated, among competing hypotheses, the one with the fewest assumptions should be selected. Among competing hypotheses, the one with the fewest assumptions should be selected. So if you have to make a lot of major assumptions. Now, if you understand the history and the culture of the people, you know that they would have gone into the wilderness with enough food to last the journey. And this one young man was sharing, and it just makes sense that they would that these people were motivated to share. Now, if you assume that Jesus took this 5 loaves and 2 fish and somehow multiplied them, you have to assume that he was able to escape the laws of physics in order to and maybe there is a law. That doesn't mean that this is wrong. It just means that the easier, simpler understanding is that people shared what they had. We have to make assumptions about the nature of Jesus and the natures of the law of the universe that we have no experience with. We have to assume things which aren't in our current understanding, and it may be that someday we will understand the law that Jesus was working with to multiply the loaves and the fishes. We don't know right offhand, but right now we have to make a major leap in faith and when there is a much simpler explanation of what happened. So that's simplicity. And we look at our lives. If we have to be contriving and planning and contorting and making people do things for in order to get what we want, then that's probably not the best route to go. But accepting life as life is and making choices based on what's presented before us, my understanding of God is good orderly direction. And God's will for me is whatever's in front of me. Whatever is God's will is for me to be up here talking with you folks and sharing with you my ideas, sharing with you unity thinking and understanding. I got this Thanksgiving, multiplying the loaves and the fishes from Rocco Errico, a longtime Unity minister who's an Aramaic scholar. That's what God's will for me is today. It's also God's will for me to let you guys go home at a reasonable time, so I'm going to have to bring this to a close. And we come to a close with that realization that all that we need is readily provided, that all we need and desire is readily provided because God is our source. God is the substance of the universe. God is that which underlies substare, to stand under. God is that which underlies all of creation. And with God as our source, all that we need and desire is readily provided. Now I'm going to personalize that and make that our affirmation for the day. With God as my source, all I need and desire is readily provided. With God as my source, all I need and desire is readily provided. Let's affirm that together. With God as my source, all I need and desire is readily provided. And a second time, like you mean it, together. With God as my source, all I need and desire is readily provided. And a third time, soft and with deep meaning. With God as my source, all I need and desire is readily provided. And so it is. And may God bless. Thank you.